Welcome back to La Magicast, everybody, our AS Roma podcast. Have a special guest for you lined up today, and we've also got some awesome Twitter questions and some good topics to discuss. We're going to get over some transfer rumors, the latest on Filou, a preview of the Juve game. So let's not waste any more time and let's get right back to it. This is Greg. I'm joined by Julian. And as I mentioned before, special guest, we've got Oscar from Blogistuta and Chiesa di Totti fame. Oscar, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Julian, why don't you get us started since we have all these questions to go through?
Yeah, I just wanted to say first, Greg, welcome back because you've been absent from quite a few pods now.
So thank you.
It's nice to have your voice back leading this instead of mine. And Alex cannot be with us due to, we're not really sure why, circumstances. So let's just jump right into this. We got a whole bunch of Twitter questions, but I think we should save those for the end. What I think we should probably start out with is, of course, we have no game this weekend. International duty takes precedence over that. But we do have a big game against Juventus coming up next week. So I'd like to first give a shout out to the It Ain't Over podcast because they had me on yesterday to preview the Juventus game with them. So I'm hoping next week we could figure out something and have one of them on our show to do a little review of the game.
Awesome.
In general, I just think I want to hear your guys' thoughts about where you think the game is going to be won, because I've been thinking about it and I really think it's going to be a battle of the wide areas where if you look, both teams have pretty solid wide men, nice wingers. They have Milos Krasic, and he's been perhaps not as good as he was early this season, but on a revival. And we have, of course, Mirko, who seems certain to play, and then either Tadej or Menez. I mean, I would prefer the latter for this game, but maybe you guys can go into that a little bit more. And I think it'll be them against – both teams seem to have pretty crappy fullbacks. So I think the game's really going to be won in the wider areas of the game. But what do you guys think?
I think I would – you know, it's – I've been the preacher of the gospel of wide pretty much since we started this podcast, and mostly because I've not been a great fan of Roma's width, and I think that you know, it's certainly an area that I've looked for when we've gone over either transfer rumors or you know, summer acquisitions and stuff like that. But I think in this case that, you know, there's probably a little bit more merit to it because I don't know that I have faith in Juve's back wide players and their fullbacks. So I think that, you know, not that ours have been in great form, but I think that it gives us a chance perhaps to take advantage of their weakness better than they may be able to take advantage of ours. From that standpoint, you know, I'd be concerned about what they could possibly do to our middle players since they've been struggling as well.
Of course, like you say, both teams are pretty weak on fullback positions, but I mean, still, the middle of the pitch is still key to me. If Rossi can stand up to whoever's playing, Aquilani and Melo, I mean, it's still a big advantage. And you know, if you've read my blog ever, you know I'm always writing for Pizarro. I mean, he's I'll never stop talking about his importance to the team. So I mean, I'm still gonna say they're both important. I'm not ready to, you know, I'm ready to abandon the entire middle of the pitch just yet. But sure, I mean, if Vucinic, I mean, it should have an advantage over their right backs, whoever they are, Grigra and the other kid. He should have, but I thought so in the fall as well, and he didn't do anything all game long. So
yeah, it's interesting because we both seem to have fullback problems, and there seems to be they have so many, and they just can't find two that play really well consistently. I know they had De Cegli doing well, and he went out injured, but right back has been a pretty big problem for them as well. And I mean, I would be thrilled to have Molta play against us because Molta's been awful all season. They were joking around on the podcast yesterday when I was on It Ain't Over. They asked me if I would take Molta back. I told them no, I wouldn't take him back. But then again, it's not as if Cassetti and Risse have been terribly world-class either. In the middle, though, I agree with Oscar. I think it's going to be a pretty tough one to predict because we both play with a hard man and then a kind of regista player, and it looks like we'll have Pizarro and De Rossi, they'll have Aquilani and Melo, and perhaps it'll just be whoever can outstop and outplay the other one of those pairings that that will win the game. And of course, it's going to be Aquilani's first game back at the Olympico since he left. How do you guys think the fans are going to treat him? Do you think it'll be a happy occasion for Alberto?
No.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people, you know, feel that there was, right or wrong, feel that there was a certain amount of abandonment at that point. So I do not envision him getting a nice welcome back for you know, playing for Juve. But I just wanted to add one more thing to the Pizarro conversation. I you know, just recently finished your last piece, Oscar, where you talked about Peck's importance, and you know, I guess just want to echo that. I think, well, I believe you wrote something to the words to the effect that you don't know what you've got until it's gone, kind of a sentiment.
And
that's so very true. You know, I mean, they've played some decent games when he's not been in there, but it's kind of been the best case scenarios where everybody played really, really well and their opponents, you know, allowed for that kind of a shift. But game in, game out against better competition, they need him in the lineup. And I think that it's when he's on his game, he allows for the width to actually play better because it draws people to pay attention to him and what's going on in the middle of the pitch, which creates those avenues down the alleys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, nothing happens, nothing takes place in sort of a vacuum. I mean, everything's right. Connected on a pitch. Pizarro, he does his thing, he pulls strings in the middle, and yeah, there's spaces on the wings. It's and likewise, I mean, if Mirko and Manis can provide width, then he'll have more space to manipulate. All interconnected.
Yeah, I just want to go back to the Aquilani comment for a second, because I spent a bit of time yesterday arguing that he would have a pretty nice welcome back, and I based it off the fact that he didn't really leave because he wanted to, at least it didn't seem that way. It kind of seemed like he left because we needed the money, and he didn't pull a Menez or anything where Menez is saying, if I don't play, I'm going to go. So I thought maybe the fans would take that into account and give him a warm welcome back, but do you guys not agree with that?
Possibly, but I mean, my thing is, I don't care about Aquilani. I mean, I nothing him, but I really don't. I'm not bitter about it. I'm not hung up about it. The thing is, I know like 30, 40, 50,000 people at a Roma game, there's going to be a lot of idiots. And Kurvasud is in a terrible state right now. And inevitably, someone, you know, the naysayers will make their voice heard. And there will be banners, there will be songs against him. And I'm not saying they represent the entire fan base, but there will be some bad words for him, to be sure. And I'm not saying I agree with them. I really think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of perception, Julian. I mean, you're right. He didn't, you know, ask to be moved, but he sure as heck didn't try real hard to make sure that he wasn't. He didn't stand in the way. He said, you know, if they sell me, they sell me. You know, it's just what happens. Maybe I don't want to go. Maybe I do. But I think perception on a lot of people's behalf, which, you know, for whatever it is perception. So it doesn't need to be right or wrong. It's just what people think and feel. I think a lot of the perception, just based on, you know, some of the internet chatter and stories going around, is that there's definitely that sense of abandonment.
Yeah, I could see that. It's just, at least from my point of view, I don't really feel ill will towards him because, again, you know, we kind of had to sell him. We didn't make the Champions League that year. And Liverpool needed someone to replace Xabi Alonso. They thought it could be him. And it didn't work out there for whatever reason you want to go for. But I don't know. It's not like he went directly from Roma to Juventus either. But I guess I could see your guys' view I could see maybe a crowd mentality taking over, where if one guy starts to chant against him, you know how crowds tend to be, they kind of go along with the flow. So I could see it either way.
Well, also, I mean, the thing is, I don't think people are too hung up about him going to Liverpool. He plays for them now, and that's I mean, he's not gonna get any special treatment just because he's from Rome. I mean, on the contrary, I mean, I guess that probably makes him even more of a target for disappointment. And he's a Juve player. I mean, I'm never gonna stop whistling a Juve player.
Especially after his assist last game, right, when he gave that great ball to Iaquinta to score against us.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of transfers, I guess we can move on a little bit to Mexes, who a few days ago it kind of looked like he was probably already a Milan player. But yesterday he came out, he spoke a bit to the press. He said he's living day by day, and that if he were to leave, he does want to stay in Italy, which that was the part that kind of bothered me the most. And he said he's not ruling out a contract extension. Quote, "I haven't decided anything yet." So is this a case of him waiting for Di Benedetto, and maybe if he agrees with his project, signing along? Or do you think he's just a little bit of paper talk before he inevitably signs for Milan in the summer?
You know, I think with him, I really do think he'd like to stay with Roma, especially looking at the fact that, you know, finally they've got a chance to, you know, put some potential pieces around the team. But at the same point in time, he is, you know, coming up as a free agent, so to speak. So it's in his best interest if he wants to stay with Rome to get the most out of Rome. I mean, he'll be able to get those kind of, you know, a good offer somewhere else. So, you know, he might as well take the chance of trying to get as much as he can. This is probably his last big contract.
Yeah, I hope he's not decided yet. I mean, I do want to believe he's gonna give enough time to hear a realistic offer from the new management. I hope that's the case. I really want that to be the case.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I hope he stays. If we just move along a bit to the other recent transfers, Adriano, of course, left, and he just recently signed with Corinthians. So I don't really know what his deal is. He said he thought his injuries were a sign he had to leave Italy. But, you know, I guess we're just glad to have gotten rid of him. And then, of course, we have Jimmy Menez, who agent won't rule out a move to Napoli. He's also being linked with Juventus. So, you know, we have quite a few headaches we have to solve this summer. And, of course, Menez last week came out and said he wasn't happy with his playing time. So, I mean, I'm of the opinion that if he really wants to leave, then you let him go. I love him, don't get me wrong, but no one should be bigger than the club. And he's only been benched in recent weeks to a coach that probably won't be here next year. So I think his statements were a little bit too strong. But then again, his contract is running out. So I see both sides of the issue. I just wish he kept his mouth shut until the summer.
The only way you make a decision on him is if you've already got a game plan as to what you're going to do for the team moving forward, because he's a special player in terms of his abilities and what he can do, but he's also, you know, can disappear and mope and whine a little bit. And we all know that he loves to, you know, play in the grass. So I think if what your plan is from the ownership standpoint for the team moving forward, if his particular skill set fits, then I'd say you make your decision now and you lock him up and you're good to go. But if you still are trying to think about what it is you're going to do and or maybe it's just to go in a different direction in terms of the skill sets that you want, then I mean, obviously then you maybe you lowball him and see what his answer is. But I'm not, you know, married to the guy. I think he's got tremendous skill. But you know, with not that we're getting a blank check coming to town, but, you know, with some more financial flexibility in the market, we don't have to bet on him panning out, is my point, I guess.
The thing about Menez is, to me, I'm really fond of him, but I'm not worried at all. I mean, his agent Migliaccio, he's been talking like this every single summer since he came. He even talked the first January window. He was going about town talking about Menez needing to play more to in order to develop. So that's just the way it is. I pay no special attention to it. As for Menez, he gave an interview, which, it was bad timing because it came out the hours after the last game, which he didn't do very well in. But it seems more to me like a case of him not having thought it through and, you know, giving up two juicy quotes for the French magazine. I'm not going to make a big deal out of this now. Obviously, I'd like him to stay because I truly believe with the right coach, he could be something truly special. But, you know, if summer comes and he does move, I'll have to deal with that then. But not now. I'm not going to get too depressed now.
Yeah, as long as you don't give them to Juve, because they already have Aquilani, they have Malta. What are we, feeding them all of our best players here? Ridiculous. Anyway, enough about player departures.
Did you just refer to Malta as one of our best players, though?
I was just about to say the same thing.
All right, Malta excluded from that. I mean, Malta was one of them. Well, hang on. For 6 months, Malta was a very, very good defender. Just for the last year, he was a very bad one.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, the first couple of months when he came from in the January window, he was quite a revelation, actually.
He did very good against Arsenal in the Champions League. I remember that.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. But then I remember it was a game against Sampdoria. He took an idiotic red card, threw the whole game off for us. And I think that was kind of a breaking point for him. He never lived up to that early hype again. And, you know, the last season he was just disastrous. When I think back to his game against Livorno, when he screwed up two offside traps against Lucarelli, who has a gut the size of I want to punch a wall when I think about it, because it still makes me so angry. And we would have won the Scudetto with those three points, we would have won it.
Yep.
Yeah, but no, I'm not bitter at all. No.
All right, let's move on from departures. Let's go to a little bit of acquisition, because it seems like crazy transfer rumors are just part of life at Roma now. Di Benedetto should be made official tomorrow, and I hope to have this pod out tonight. I really want to edit it as soon as we're done, so hopefully this will be relevant when people are listening. So one of the names being linked to us is Lucas Podolski, and this is a transfer I would be fully against, because Podolski has never cut it on the club level for me. Great on the national team, but he's just one of those players that just doesn't do it on the club level. I know we need strikers, but there are a lot out there, and Podolski I don't think would be a good fit for us.
He's another guy that's maybe not every transfer session, you know, including the January windows, but maybe every other one has been linked with Roma.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, if you haven't seen the music video about him and his name,
I'll have to link that when I post this, because that is just a fantastic video.
that is entertainment that never stops giving. I'll say that. But, you know, yeah, it's tough to figure these kinds of players out who seem so talented when you're dealing with, the national team, and then yet for some reason in club form just don't really know, they can't put it together. Maybe it's they need those superstar pieces around them in order to, you know, to show, or to shine, rather. I'm really not sure, but I actually like him. I've every time I watch the kid play, even if it's on club, he managed to have a good game, he's got a tremendous left shot, and I don't know, I wouldn't mind seeing him in a Roma kit.
Oscar, what are your thoughts about Podolski?
I haven't thought about it at all. I mean, it sounds like a completely ridiculous rumor to me, and I guess I just filtered it out. But no, I'm not a fan. I've never seen him. I don't watch much international football, so I realized he's at his best for Germany, which I've obviously missed most of. But I'm not a fan. I don't see him being able to take that form and, you know, produce it in Rome, which, I mean, if he had trouble producing in Bayern, he should have a lot more trouble doing it in Rome, which is a very special climate, and you need to be incredibly headstrong in order to make it. So I would be mildly depressed if we signed him.
So do you think Buffon maybe would be a better transfer, because he has been linked with us quite consistently, and at first it just seemed like paper talk, but his agent came out recently and he said, in life you can't exclude anything, which again is one of those great quotes that, you know, football agents say, which don't mean anything, so they can just get away with not really saying anything, but it's no surprise we kind of need a goalie, and it looks like his time at Juve may be running out. Of course, we were originally, I think, set to sign him before Juventus did, and we just didn't have the money then. But things have changed a bit now, and given his age and the fact that we have new owners, we might be able to afford him. I don't think this is a secret. This is a transfer I would adore immensely if we got Buffon. He's my favorite player out there, and I think he would definitely tighten up our back line.
Yeah, I mean, he would, but, I mean, I'm not sure. It's too much of a coincidence to me that this rumor came out just as, you know, the papers are getting view of the next game, which is exactly. I mean, it never fails, does it? They always bring out rumors linking players. I mean, yeah, you have Menes to Juve as well. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, if it continues deep into April, then yeah, maybe there's something to it. But and I'm sure, to be sure, he would make us stronger. But I don't know. It feels like I was kind of last summer after the World Cup, I was ready to, you know, sign off on his career. I thought his back problems were too severe to overcome. I didn't think he'd make it back. And no, he has made it back. I just wonder how long it will last for him. Because he had some really serious issues with his back last summer. And yeah, he was out almost half this season as well. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one to come back. I mean, I think he plays the right position. You know, I mean, it's not like he's got to, you know, run up and down the field. So from that standpoint, he's got that going for him. But, you know, there's just I don't put a lot of stock, like you said, Oscar. If this thing is still running around in a month or so, then maybe we can, you know, chat about it a little bit more seriously. But there is just something about, you know, that kind of confidence. I don't know if either of you guys saw the game on Friday, the qualifier.
The
difference between him back there and anybody else that we put back there in controlling the ball in the air is the difference between me crapping my pants with our defense and not really caring, you know, because every ball that came in, you know, he pretty much just took care of as if it was, you know, the most natural thing in the world. And, right. And that's what it's, you know, it's his experience, it's his knowledge, it's, you know, obviously his abilities, but, you know, it just really brings something completely and totally different. And when you look at the mess Roma's had on set pieces and corners, you know, something like that would be fantastic. To which I would then say, you're probably not going to get him, but maybe, you know, what's the two or three degrees below him that, you know, doesn't suck on set pieces.
Right. It's just, it's interesting because he's a little bit Podolski right now in that, for Juve recently, he hasn't been that good. A lot of the Juve fans have complained that he's not as good as commanding the area as he used to be. But for some reason, when he plays for Italy, you know, he's always a totally different player. And it looks like maybe this could be a step back to him regaining his form. So it is interesting. Of course, the other goalie we're linked with all the time is Chorchi because he's either, I can never remember if he's on loan or if he's half co-owned by Sampdoria, but he is half of our player. And he's shown quite a bit of promise too, so I wouldn't mind if he came in instead. But I think the important thing this summer is we need a goalie, one that we're going to give the number one to, and not have this nonsense where, like, you know, is it Doni, is it Julio Cesar, is Labonte maybe better than both of them? You know, that kind of crazy talk.
Well, if it was Julio Cesar, it probably would be him, but Julio Sergio, on the other hand, is a topic of another discussion.
Exactly.
But, you know, to that point, I don't know that if that's the case, then it's not going to be Kurci that's going to be the guy that's brought in as the number one. It's going to be an actual number one. So
you don't think Kurci could be the number one?
I don't.
No.
Well, I think he can be a number one, but I don't think if we're going out and we're going to get a goalie from the market, that's not who we should go for.
Who would you go for if not Gigi or Kurci? Who do you think would be better?
Oh, I'm not saying we shouldn't go for a Gigi. I'm just saying I don't think we're getting him.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think we can get him. I honestly don't know who, you know, who's could potentially be available that would be an intelligent choice. But if you had a chance to go out and get a goalie to be a top flight goalie for a team with aspirations that Roma has every season regardless, then I don't know that you want to spring that on Kurci at this point.
Would you agree, Oscar, or do you think maybe Kurci could be a potential number one for us?
I hope he's never the number one for Roma. I don't trust him. He's played a couple of good games, both for us and for other clubs, but I wouldn't trust him at all. And I don't know. I don't think this season has done much to strengthen his credentials, even if goalkeeping may not be his club's worst problem right now. But, I mean, it doesn't look good. His team was relegated last year. Now, I mean, a team that should have no business even talking about relegation, or, you know, they're in trouble. It doesn't look good on his resume.
Well, one goalie I would be really interested in, I really like him. I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts. I know I've talked about him with Alex before, but I don't think you were on that episode, Greg, was Viviano. I think Viviano has shown that he's quite a good goalie, very solid. He's been very good for Italy when he's played. And, I mean, he is prone to the occasional mistake, but what goalie isn't? And he makes very good reflex saves, and I think his positioning is quite solid as well. So do you guys think maybe he would be a better option than Kurci?
Better than Kurci? Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's... I don't know the how easy it would be to get him because he's half owned by Inter. But, I mean, to be sure, he's a much better option than Kurci.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Certainly on that point, as to overall, just without comparing him to anybody, would he be the guy that I chose? Without much thought, maybe, but if I really, you know, I mean, I'd want to take a look at all of Europe and see what's, you know, again, who's available and at what price. And you know, if you just take a look at teams that are doing well in the Champions League, and you know, there's usually a really good field general back there, and that's the kind of you know, of goalie that I'm looking for.
Indeed. And speaking of who's available, maybe this is a good segue into going into Carlo, because today or yesterday, I forgot what day this was. He said that he wants to stay at Chelsea, and ideally, he would return to Italy in 2014. So, That was kind of interesting because, you know, as we've talked about before, Greg, he's always saying, oh, I'll coach Roma one day soon, but, you know, not too soon. And this is kind of him saying that maybe he does really want to build something at Chelsea. On the other hand, there might be a feeling that perhaps he's a sitting duck, just kind of saying these things. But, you know, come the summer, if he hasn't won the Champions League, Abramovich probably will run out of patience with him anyway. So do you think in the light of these new comments, should we adjust our expectations for Ancelotti, or are these just, you know, paper talks?
Yeah, I think it's just more paper talk. How many deals were struck right after some kind of similar comment was made? So I'm not quite ready to, you know, get rid of him as an option. I don't know that I'm also, you know, in the camp of those that firmly believe that it doesn't matter, he'll be here in June. But at the same point in time, I think this is just definitely, you know, just getting the conversation going. I honestly don't think that it's going to impact his decisions this summer or not.
Yeah, I'd agree. I would be, I'm not gonna say it's a done deal, but I would be surprised if he isn't our next coach. And this is just smoke and mirrors, just to be able to maintain a tolerable last couple of months to in order to close out the season. Because I mean, it's troubling to have constant speculation over the future of the coach. And they've done better lately, and I think it's just a strategy from all parties involved to maintain some sort of calm and not get carried away and being dominated by speculation and media headlines.
It's interesting because let's say Ancelotti wasn't to come in. Would you guys consider perhaps giving Montella an extension, letting him stay on for next season? And again, me and Alex talked about this last time, so I don't want to go into what I think too much. Basically, I would be against it because I just don't, he has no experience. He hasn't shown really that he's even much of a coach. He just kind of reverted back to the Spalletti days. He's a good motivator. He seems like a Leo kind of character to me. I'm not sure I would want him to be the long-term coach, although you never know, he could be the next Guardiola hidden, but I doubt it. But that's what I think. What do you guys think? Do you think maybe he has it in him to do this long term?
I think that, well, regardless of long term or not, if it's probably in the thought or in the plans to get a very significant name to be the coach. If that does not happen for whatever reason in June, then I would say they may be better off just letting him stay in to keep some continuity until they can get that big name, instead of bringing in somebody else who's a stopgap to the stopgap and then going after the big name later. You know, listen, we all love what he did as a player, and, you know, it seems like he's at least, you know, accruing points now. But the reality is you're only as faithful as your options, and until a better option opens up, I'd say you stay with him. But as soon as that option opens up, you take it and you run with it.
I've been kind of surprised, actually, that I think Montella is very methodical as a coach. He's more or less the complete opposite of what I was expecting in terms of characteristics. He's very... I mean, to see him with his notepad and, you know, he's using GPS in training sessions, and he's very subdued on the bench, on the sidelines. But that's kind of impressed me, but I wouldn't feel confident about a new project with him in charge. I mean, unless something changes from here until June, obviously. But as of right now, I would not be very comfortable with placing the club in his hands, no.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel as well. Which would tie nicely to our first Twitter question. This one's a bit long. I'm just going to read the whole thing. It's from Lil Afro on Twitter, which is a great Twitter name. And he says to me, this is a bit of a conspiracy theory kind of question. I haven't heard anything about this, so I'm really interested to see if you guys have. And he goes, I haven't seen anyone discussing the fact that we sold the Shakhtar game. I mean, to me, the instructions, Montella, do not even try to win, were very obvious. Even though it's in our best interest to crash out and focus on Serie A, but throwing a game away like that just ain't Romanista to me. I've been a Roma fan for as long as I can remember, but the last year the vibe was so wrong, and I believe Daniele De Rossi said something like that too. So why don't you guys discuss what every blogger news carrier haven't touched? Which, I don't know, we talked about this before. I really think the exit was kind of done in the first leg when we lost at home. And I don't think we threw it away at all in the second leg, because until they scored the first goal, we looked way more likely to score than they were going to. It's not as if we didn't try. It seemed to me that after that first goal, we just lost motivation completely, knowing we had to score, I think, three times. And I don't think that's throwing the game. That's somewhat understandable, because you're playing away to a team that hasn't lost in 2 years. And I could understand why they'd be so disappointed after coming so close to scoring themselves, to let in what was really a pretty crappy goal that kind of just got deflected in. So I don't think we sold it. I don't think it's as if the guys didn't try. I just think it was really disappointing.
Yeah, I'll even go so far as to say that historically, you know, there have been some exceptions, but we generally haven't done very well at this stage, you know, of the tournament, or even certainly the next stage, even worse. So I just think it was typical of this time of the year, playing so many games, involved in so many other tournaments and as well as league play, that it just, you know, they don't have the legs, they don't have the horses and the depth that a lot of these other teams do, that allow them to cover so many games in a given time. And I just think it caught up to them. And yeah, they had to reverse a 3-2 away goal situation, which, you know, again, we talked about on the podcast at the time, best case scenario or easiest case scenario was a 2-0 win away, which is very, very doable. But as you pointed out, Julian, Shakhtar very, very good at home, and they weren't sitting back. They weren't playing to you know, just hold on to their 3-2 first leg score. So I think they had the right tactics and the right personnel to beat us. And that's just what happened, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, even Julian, you mentioned that until they scored, we were in it. I think we were in it. I mean, they at least tried even after that. I mean, we got
right.
The penalty after, which came about because of, you know, a fair amount of effort on a part of the players. We missed it, and then Mexes was sent off, and, you know, as we do, things tend to fall apart. But I mean, if
only so well,
it was like a sliding doors moment. If we score that penalty, if Mexes isn't sent off, it could have been different. And I'm not saying I'm not going to blame them for, you know, not for losing 3-0 after that. That was a bad 10 minutes of the game. And no, I don't think we sold the game.
I believe that's our first Gwyneth Paltrow reference on the podcast.
I was just going to add that if you look at Mexes' red card, I think that's another example of us not selling the game. Why would you go in for a potentially risky tackle if you didn't care, you know? So, just for the record, I think all three of us are in agreement that we didn't really sell the game. Maybe by the end it looked like we weren't playing because we really didn't have a chance of going through, but it's not as if the team didn't try. Do you think that's fair to say?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we've addressed that. Ugamis asked us a question as well, and he said, does Montella deserve a chance next season? We've already went over that. Should Totti be a first-team player next season, or should he be a backup? And I just want to say that I think that's tough to say, because we don't really know what the summer mercato is going to bring. If, you know, if we suddenly become rich and we pull in guys like David Villa, I'm not saying we will. But it depends what we do this summer. And he's still definitely shown that he's got it. I don't know if he should be an impact sub now or a starter, but, you know, 201 goals in Serie A is not something to be taken lightly.
No, it's not, and I think he's certainly showing that he can still play at a very, very high level and has the class certainly still with him to some degree. I'll just say this, so it's not a direct answer to the question, so I apologize to the person asking, but I'll just say that if he's still our best option, then we either did a poor job during the Mercato, or you know, the funds for available purchases have not been made ready yet. And that's no knock on him. I just think that if we're truly going to, you know, start to try and make some kind of a statement with the new ownership and moving forward, then I think there's going to be players brought in that'll probably be able to, you know, obviously maybe they might not have his class, but they'll certainly have the speed back and or over him and some other things, maybe strategic changes or whatever. But you know, the only other thing I'll say is I know that the Di Benedetto team is very, very keen on focusing on Totti from a marketing standpoint and trying to sell the team. So who knows? Maybe that'll factor in.
It's a bit of an awkward situation. I mean, you're never gonna get me to say one bad word about the guy, and I'm completely attached to him as a player and as an icon for the club. And I think he's been our best player the last couple of weeks. I think it's, in my mind, that's been pretty clear. It's not as if he's riding on reputation alone. He's earned his place lately. But, I mean, it all depends on... And, I mean, the thing is, I don't believe in, you know, a starting 11 type of football anymore. I think the key to success is having at least 14, 15 players that are more or less interchangeable, and you can choose your strongest weapon on the day. So I think there's a place for him next year as well. Obviously, if there's not a rapid decline, but
I don't really see that. I think you know, I don't want to speak for Julian, but just based on our history on the show, I think we all kind of hold him in that esteem still, and it doesn't really matter what much happens here. He's going to be this icon forever. But I definitely think he has to be a part of the team next year, and it's just a matter of to what degree, right? So you look at what Borriello did at the beginning of the season, so therefore did it make sense that he was playing a little more over Totti? Absolutely. But to your point, Oscar, there's no such thing as a true starting 11. When the tide turned, Borriello started struggling, Totti regained form a little bit, then he plays. And I would look at next year and see that to be exactly the same way.
Yeah. That's I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I would agree with that, Greg. I don't want to, you know, I agree with what you said. You put words in my mouth, but I think they were good words. I would have said the same thing. So we got another one from Ill Roadrunner, and this one got me thinking a bit. And he asked me, do you think a top four finish is essential if Mexes and De Rossi are to reject other offers and renew their contracts? And I think it's tough to say. De Rossi, I don't think it matters. I think he's going to renew it eventually. Anyway, at least I'd like to hope so. I think the real problem is Mexes, because we just don't know. And I'm not sure if it's necessarily a top four finish. I think it really depends what Di Benedetto comes in and what his project's looking like. If it's really appealing and ambitious, then I think he'll renew, even if we finish outside the top four. But, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other factors, too. How much money are Milan offering? Are we going to make, you know, bank on this? Is he just going to leave on the free anyway? You know, I think it's too complicated to really answer right now.
I'd agree with you. I think it's the project that they're building will be more important than in having a qualification spot for next year's Champions League. I think long term is much more interesting than just a binary mode of are we fourth or not. That's takes precedence for me, at least.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And coincidentally, and I guess you have to say unfortunately, a lot of the teams that I follow are going through a similar process where after years of trying to go for the big win, are starting to, you know, rework their organization so that they can be very good for years in a row, and build, you know, a true championship team so that at the transactional periods, you're just adding missing pieces instead of trying to add the whole puzzle. And I think Roma would be wise to kind of address, and I think just based on what we've read, at least a little bit, that's part and parcel of what this new ownership wants to do. So I definitely, you know, think that that's the better play is to focus on putting together that long-term project. So good point, Oscar.
Yeah, all right, let's move on to the next one then. This one made me laugh. It's from my good friend Cyrax, who runs the Arsenal offside and the TFC offside. I love you, Cyrax, you're awesome. And I asked her questions on Twitter, and she replied, "The state of Mexis's hair, discuss."
Well, I, you know, outside of the, was it 2 years ago when he started with the crazy double offshoots there? You know, pardon me for not knowing the correct term and terminology of Filou's hair, but you know, when he's got that good single roll going, performances usually follow. That's as much as I can offer.
I could go into a lot of detail here.
Please do.
In very extensively. It's picked up again, just as his game has. Last, I think it was last fall, 2009, yeah, when he brought out that space mullet. That was horrendous. And, I mean, he was benched, and he had a terrible year on the pitch as well. Are these coincidences? Maybe, but I don't believe in coincidences.
is this the classic modern-day example of Samson in the Bible, where you cut his hair and you take away his power?
Yeah, exactly.
Good point. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, when he breaks, we'll just say this to answer the question in one line. When he breaks from the mold, bad things happen.
Pretty classic, Mexis. Okay, and Stuart, our good friend Stuart Harper sent us a question. And this is the last one we got, and I think it's a pretty good one. And he wants us to discuss what we think Benedetto's buying strategy should be. And he says, with specific reference to the pitfalls of going down the Galacticos route. So I guess a brief mention of the Galacticos, just in case anyone doesn't know. Of course, Real Madrid, back when Perez was their coach first time, had this policy of buying a world-class superstar every year. And, of course, it was never really successful. It just, you know, the idea being that just because someone, you have a team of the best 11 individuals in the world, doesn't mean they're the best team in the world. You know, teams are obviously much more than just the best players. There's got to be a sum greater than the whole there. So with that in mind, I agree with Stuart. I don't necessarily want to go after the big name players. I kind of like our policy of bringing in these maybe unknown guys who turn into really good players. So I don't really know. I'd like to have a big name transfer. I think that'd be a really nice sign for the club that, you know, we are ready to compete in modern times. But if we were going to go after strikers, I'd prefer someone. Again, I'm not saying we're going to get either of these. This is just for comparison's sake. I would prefer, say, Luis Suarez over Fernando Torres, or, you know, a goalie like Viviano, maybe over just a big name signing just to get him. So I think that's where I would stand on that.
Well, I'll just reiterate what Oscar and I said before in terms of what I think they should do, and that's, you know, have a plan that's going to be for long-term success. So whatever that includes from their standpoint, that's the tactic that they should take. So if you can get a big name player, but if he's young enough and the price is right enough, then yeah, go ahead and get him. And if it, as long as they, you know, it's all about fitting the pieces of the puzzle together to, you know, to have a successful team, then I'm all for it.
I'd add that none of the men in the back office or whatever the terminology is here, none of the not Baldini, not Sabatini, none of them have ever been the type to go out and sign the big names, or at least the biggest names.
Right.
When Baldini took Batistuta, that was obviously an exception, but he also Samuel and Emerson the same summer. So, and that's always been his preference to take the next star, not the star or the biggest name. So I don't think it's likely at all that we start, you know, that we create a sort of alternative to Man City or Chelsea. Because, first of all, like I said, I don't think the people involved are used to working like that. I don't think they prefer to work like that. And second of all, I think a lot of people are going to get disappointed if they're expecting that, because I don't think that much money is going to get invested. I've heard figures like 50 million this summer, which for us is huge. I mean we haven't had any stuff like that since for 11 years now, but it's still not enough if you want to sign the biggest names. You have the G14 tax, which makes it virtually impossible for us to compete with those signings.
Yeah, I just want to echo that. Personally, I think we really should go the route of younger players, and we've been linked a lot to Drogba because I think it seems natural that Torres just went into Chelsea. If Ancelotti leaves, you know, maybe there'll be trouble fitting Torres, Drogba, and Anelka all together, so we'll take Drogba with him. And good as Drogba is, don't get me wrong, he's already 33 years old. And for a side undergoing rebuilding, I really don't think signing a 33-year-old striker on a long-term contract is really the proper way to undergo this. So I agree with what you guys are saying, but I really hope that this summer is about focusing on youth, especially given the rapidly aging side of the squad. And with Perota back in the starting lineup in Tadej, there's very few players who start that are even in mid to late 20s. A lot of the guys are 30 and over.
Yeah, that's what I was it's almost sacrilege to say to a degree, but somewhat disappointed at first when Cassetti and Perota re-signed. But then I figured, you know, then they don't have to worry about getting depth guys, because if they're not your number ones and you have that midweek game or whatever the case may be, and those are the players that you have to put in, you're getting a known quality right there. So,
Greg, I would agree with that, but I think the only problem is some fans might be worried that they were re-signed to be the number ones for next year, which I think would be a huge problem.
It would be, but I think it's premature to make that call, because we don't know what ownership and the new management and everything else is going to do. So I'm trying to say, okay, why am I re-signing these guys? What would I be trying to do? And, you know, if there are depth, I think that's great for us, because we know what we've got with them. If they're still going to be guys that are going to be battling for starting positions on a regular basis, then, you know, well, let's look at it this way. It's not killing us right now, but our objective is to not be surviving, it's to be thriving. So, and I just totally came up with that in the matter of 3 seconds, so I may quit the podcast right now. But, you know, I think as fans, we're just a little tired of always having to, you know, cut ties with someone. And I think, you know, to Oscar's point, you know, if we get that 50 million to spend, even if it's less, even if it's half of that, the fact that we don't have to get rid of players is a huge win. So we may be able to re-sign some guys that generally we wouldn't have been able to. we'll be able to bring in some new players, and we won't have to get rid of anybody. So, yeah, I agree. I don't think this guy's coming with Chelsea-type money, you know, Abramovich-type money, and, you know, we'll get the money that we get, and it's going to be great, but the thing is, at least we won't have to lose anything.
It wouldn't be feasible to rebuild the entire squad in one summer anyway.
Right.
I don't see the problem with re-upping Cassetti and Perotta because I get it, it's not sexy news. A lot of people are fed up with them. A lot of people are disappointed in them playing, but any coach wouldn't mind having them as options, and that's what they are.
That's true. If I could just
that's why I changed my stance from, you know, saying like at first I was disappointed, but then when I've never been disappointed with Perotta. You know, maybe like you said, disappointed that maybe he's our best option, but you can never be really, you know, upset with what that guy provides.
Right. It just
unless he's missing the 5 foot sitter.
But I'm not saying we should have necessarily given him up. I just think that, you know, there's a lot of guys running out of contracts. You know, Mexes, Menez, De Rossi, even. And so for these two to get their contract extensions first, might seem to some people. I'm not saying I agree because you know you never know what goes into a contract extension. But it might seem to some people that the club has their priorities out of whack. You know, shouldn't De Rossi have a contract extension? But it could have just been as simple as these guys were easier to negotiate contract extensions with. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, so they got it. But I do see the other point as well.
Yeah, one year for $1 million for guys that are at the end of their career and to stay in the place that they love. Yeah, that's a slam dunk contract on both sides. That's why that got done first.
Yeah, it's so superficial to talk about. Yeah, Mexes should have his contract renewed, but it's not that easy. I mean, it's not as if they've ignored him while re-upping Cassetti. It's just that Mexes wants to buy this time. He wants to play, see what his options are. Cassetti was probably delighted to be offered a contract, and it was worked out with minimal trouble, minimal effort, with minimal money. It has to be said for the type of quality player he is. While even if a lot of people will disagree with me on that one, but it has nothing to do with each other, I think. That said, not re-signing Mexes last summer was still a huge mistake, and it should never have gone to this point, but I don't see how it's related at all.
Yeah, I would agree. But I'm not saying I agree with the people who say those things, but I have heard it before, so I thought it was important to mention. And that was the last Twitter question we got. Over on my blog, I read for the Italy Offside, I got a really long comment last time from Mentalita Ultra, and it's really good, but the whole first part of it addresses Alex, and he's not here. So I'm really sorry about that. There is one part that addresses me, because I said something once that he had a bone to pick, so I just want to address it really quickly. When he said one time, I also didn't get why you say we have to sacrifice either Totti or Borriello and Menez for the other to start. I think is referring to a few pods ago, and from what I remember, I don't think I meant that they necessarily have to be sacrificed. I think we were talking about how it seems that if back then it was either like Menez and Borriello play well together and Totti and Vucinic play well together. And since all four can't play at the same time, if we're going to go with this pairing theory of strikers, then it seems like only one pair is going to get picked. So if you pick Totti and Vucinic, Menez and Borriello would be benched. And I'm not saying I agree with that. I just said at the time that's what it seemed like it was going. So I just wanted to clarify that. I don't know if you guys want to add anything to that discussion as well.
No, I think you got it.
Okay, that was the last of our questions. That was the last of what I had lined up. Is there anything else you guys want to cover before we wrap this up?
I can just say how incredibly excited I am about the prospect of Baldini rejoining Roma. I was over the weekend, I was looking at an old YouTube videos of him that Discord
the interview, for, Oscar? The interview one?
No, some other ones that some upset Juventini were had uploaded that allegedly proves that he masterminded their relegation and that he knew information months before it came out in media. And I just want to say that if that is the case, I love him even more than I thought was possible, and I cannot wait until he runs the club again. And
yeah,
I get chills when I think about both him running the club and the facial expression of every single gobo out there when they see him, when they start hearing his voice again, when they start seeing his quotes in the media. I cannot wait for the day. Even if it doesn't come now, one day it'll come, and I'm incredibly excited about that.
Yeah, when the rumor started flowing, I guess maybe even as far back as December, with his name being attached, and I was catching up on same thing on YouTube. It was just some of his interviews and everything, and there's just a certain sense of comfort that comes of watching the man kind of do his thing. And so, yeah, fingers crossed. Here we go. Hopefully something happens.
Yeah. This summer should be really interesting at any rate, no matter what we do or what we don't do. I think it's going to be quite a ride.
Yeah. And I just want to say one thing to all the Twitter people out there. Received a lot of warm comments about our, my family's new addition, my new daughter, Daniela. So I just wanted to say thank you to everybody, and thank you for my birthday wishes, which came the next day after Daniela was born. So I haven't really spent a whole lot of time tweeting lately, which will hopefully change in the near future. So in lieu of responding back to everybody, I'll just say a big thank you right here for all the nice and warm wishes.
Yeah, just want to give you a congrats, Greg. You were missed on the show, but obviously between the baby and the new cell phone, you had a lot of stuff going on in your life, so understandable.
Right, yes. New cell phone, just a smidge below in the priority rung.
All right. I guess we could wrap it up. I just really want to thank Oscar for coming on. It was fantastic having you on. I hope we can have you on again in the near future.
Yeah, this was the... the if you want to call this journalism, equivalent of, a Serie B player coming up and playing with Totti from Julian and my perspective, longtime fans of Bloggy Stuta, such a, an honor for us to have you on here again. So thank you, Oscar.
Thanks for having me. I'd be glad to come on again, and preferably in connection to the next game, because I'm going to have a lot of things to say about that. No, either way, I mean, even if we win, if we lose, I'll have a lot to say.
About the Juventus game, you mean, or the one after?
Yeah, how about you, Juve?
Yeah, maybe we could set that up. I don't see any reason why not.
It was just an idea. But, thanks for having me. It's been fun, and thanks.
All right, well, again, thank you, Oscar. Thank you, Julian. This is Greg, and we have just finished yet another La Magicast podcast as we talk about our beloved AS Roma. So I guess we'll just see you after Juve game. Grazie, Roma.
Ciao.
Ciao.